Please be seated, everybody. You know what my favorite thing about Mike's 5+1 block party announcement was? Watching him try to get that cupcake out of his mouth while he talked to us at the same time. Like every now and then I'd see this like sliver of chocolate come spewing out of his mouth. It was quite appetizing to watch. So anyway, nobody else thought that was funny. No laughs, no courtesy laughs or anything on that. I'm really excited. I just got back from vacation. It's really good to be home and really good to be here tonight. We did something this morning in our worship service that those of you who only come to our evening worship gathering often don't get the opportunity to experience. You know, last month or 2 months ago in June, we did our celebration out at Shawnee Mission Park. I don't know how many of you were able to be there, but that's one of the places during the year that we baptize adults. But often in the life of our community, you know, we've got a lot of kids around here, and they're not, you know, this is a young service, obviously, but we've got a lot of kids. 150 children come to Jacob's Well in the morning, and it's just absolute and utter chaos, right? And so one of the things that we do periodically in the morning is that we once a quarter take time to baptize infants. And I know that different people have different experiences of their theology of baptism and who should be a proper candidate for baptism. But the more I've grown in my understanding of who God is and the way that God longs to create and build covenant with his people, the more I've grown really possessed by and fallen in love with this notion of infant baptism, because what it really signifies is the entrance of a child into the community of faith. It's into the active participation in the life of God. Now, many people think that kids aren't really available to God until they make some kind of personal decision to follow Jesus. I don't know, maybe that's right, but that has not been my experience. Either as a kid or watching my own children grow up, that when children are brought into a community of faith and trained and shown what it looks like to walk in the way of God, they often begin to have very real and vital relationships with God, even at a very young age. And I don't know what your own memory of your own relationship with God is as a kid, but one of my favorite things now is actually marking a child in baptism. Just in the same way that in the Old Testament you would see a child brought to the temple and circumcised, being marked as a member of the covenant, that's what we do in baptism. We say we are marking you as a participant in the corporate life of God and his people. And I just love doing that. To say that you are a welcome part of this community, and we expect from a very young age you to have a relationship with God, and we're going to go out of our way and try to figure out what it looks like to cultivate your life in God and take you seriously regardless of what your age is. Because you are being marked as a member of God's covenant people. And as we do that, as we take the initiative and invite parents to bring their children and really invite you to bring yourselves and say, I want to be a follower of Jesus. I want to follow God in the path and in the way of Jesus. What that does is that produces obligation on those of us who actually administer the sacrament. We're inviting you to come into a way of life of which baptism is a marker of that entrance into that. It doesn't mean if you haven't been baptized, you can't be a follower of Jesus. It's just a very visible sacrament or sign of God's life in you. And the way in which I think it obligates us is in the community is to say, what are we going to do with you? In other words, to follow Jesus is not simply just to make a decision then start coming to church. But how are we going to spiritually nurture your life in God? Children have responsibility for that. Parents have responsibility for that. You as adults have responsibility for the nurture and the growth of your life. But as a church, you come here because I think in some sense you're saying we want to be shaped and formed in the way of Jesus, and we do not believe that we can do that on our own. Will you help us? And so that's one of the purposes of a spiritual discipline of corporate worship, that we come together regularly for the purpose of being shaped in the story of God and doing things together that don't make sense doing them alone. I mean, I don't know how many of you guys at work sometimes get invited by your boss to come into the room and do corporate group singing. Does that happen a lot? No, there are certain things that only make sense to do in certain environments. And that's one of the things that we do here. And so one of the questions that I'm struggling with right now, and that as a church we've been wrestling with, and I know this is a little bit weird because a lot of you here don't have kids, right? But one of the things that we've been wrestling with as a church is how do we motivate, how do we cultivate, and how do we stimulate faith in the lives of our kids? Because I tell you what, Jacob's Well is really a community. And one of the things that we've worked really hard at our church to do is not be a church that is segregated along life stage lines. Do you know what I'm talking about? You go to certain churches and kids are over here and singles have their little niche here and families are over here and older people over here and never the twain shall meet, right? And I think that that has some advantages for doing certain kinds of things. But what we begin to lose out on is the common life of a group of people who are trying to figure out what it looks like to follow Jesus. And one of the things that I'm increasingly intrigued by as a person that wants to be this church to really be significant in terms of the life of its people is what is spiritual development? Or how do we cultivate spiritual life? Or how do we do spiritual formation in the lives of a human being from the time they're born till the time they die? Because I really believe that we're invited to follow God faithfully over the course of our life. And I think that we are called to think about what does faithfulness look like in terms of inviting people into deeper and deeper understanding of and relationship to and service to Jesus Christ. How do we cultivate faith in ourselves? But how do we cultivate faith in our kids and in our children? You know, this is one of my favorite times of the year. How many of you are going back to school or have either already started going back to school or getting ready to go back to school? I know there's a lot of people who are completely out of school. I love this season of the year. My kids started going back to school last Wednesday. I love going to Osco, getting all the school supplies, you know. I always get like a little cart just for me because I like sharp pencils. I'm a total dork, you know, all that stuff. I just love that. In fact, one of the things I'm really struggling with right now is I kind of have this secret desire to go back to school because there's just something at this time of the year. Of course, it begins to wane come April, right? But there's something at this time of the year about the idea of starting something, of being intentional about putting yourself under a teacher or under a program for the purpose of learning. Some of you out there might be saying, you are absolutely psycho. There is nothing appealing about the idea of doing any of those things. Okay, that's just me. But I think that there's something significant at this time of the year in terms of thinking, what are we going to do this year to cultivate our faith? Because I think in some ways, so much of what we do as Christians is learn. And we sit under teachers, for example. And that's one of the things that we've been wrestling, particularly as we think about the kids in our community, because we're at the time of the year where we're actually restarting our children's ministry program. And we've really been wrestling through what does it look like for us to build faith in the lives of our children? Because, you know, for most of us, we grew up who grew up in church, we grew up doing what? Adults come to worship and kids go where? Sunday school. And the thing that's ironic is we've just kind of unthinkingly kept doing a Sunday school model, even though the culture that gave birth to the Sunday school model is like 200 years old. Do you know that Sunday school was birthed in a culture where moms and dads worked literally 6 days a week? And on Sunday, generally in England where this happened, the common practice is that was the day that people, when they didn't work, would get drunk and just pass out. And so there were all these orphan kids running around England all over the place. And most of them were uneducated and illiterate, right? And so what the church did was say, hey, you know what? Maybe this would be a good mission that we take these kids that are functionally being orphaned by their alcoholic parents and bring them into church and teach them how to read. That's what Sunday school was using the Bible as a way to teach kids to read so that they would actually serve their community. It's extraordinary. Now, we're a long way from that in terms of what we're doing in Sunday school, isn't it? And so the question that we've been wrestling with as a church is what does it look like for us to help kids form their faith? And as I talk about this tonight, I want you to be thinking about your own life. In fact, I want to start by asking you guys a couple questions. How was your faith cultivated as a child? Think about your life growing up and the environment that you grew up in. What was done to cultivate your life in God as a child? Was it taken seriously at all? Was it taken too seriously? What were some of the things? Did the place in which you grew up make any acknowledgement that you as a human being had a soul and that your soul had certain appetites that needed to be fed? You know, as parents, one of the things that we're really good at is learning how to feed our kids' minds. We put them in school, right? We know how to feed their bodies because when they're hungry, they whine. But how do you feed a soul? And how do you teach a child to recognize when their mind's not the thing that's hungry and their body's not the thing that's hungry, but the soul is the thing that's crying out to be fed? How was your soul attended to as a child? Was your faith cultivated? Now, I'm going to ask you a couple questions for which I'd like to receive some feedback. Okay, for those of you who in some way had your faith cultivated as a kid, what was good? What were things that you felt like the environment that you grew up in were really productive for the stimulation of your faith and things that you still live off and feed today? I'm sorry? Freedom. When, and can you say a little bit more about what you mean by that? Okay, so
I would get feedback from my parents, but they still gave me the freedom to decide.
Okay, so what he said was he had freedom, that his parents gave him freedom to make decisions about how he was going to live his life, but they didn't abandon him to that. What they did instead was gave him feedback about those things. You know what that's called? Spiritual direction. That you don't control somebody, but that you actually walk with them as they walk with God, and that you don't control them. You give them the freedom to make mistakes and to make decisions. And that was an environment that probably was full of grace, I'm assuming. And that's a really great thing. What an awesome gift. Other things that were good in environments where faith was being cultivated. Yeah. Oh, that's great. Okay, so she said diversity on her dad's day off. Your dad was involved in ministry? He was a pastor. Okay, so her dad was a pastor. And on the days that he was off, they would always go to another church or another expression of faith to see the different ways, different denominations. You know, when we only worship around people who are like us, we can tend to have a narrow view of the reality of who God is. And it can cause us to be ungenerous in our understanding of who we're called to be. And so there was something really great about you being able to be in environments where people weren't like you, and yet you saw that they still loved God. That's awesome. Outstanding. Mike, yeah. Really loud. That's awesome. What Mike said was that his faith life had multiple sources of input into it. There were uncles, there were neighbors, there were older people that invested in him. That is such a critical thing, because kids, for so long as they grow up, they think that their parents worshiping is the only, that's the way everybody lives, right? But then you get to be, what, about ninth grade, and you begin to see out there that there are a lot of people who are living life differently, and your parents, man, they may be whacked, I mean, as far as you know. And so to begin to have other people who are adults begin to invest in you and disciple you and model the way of God consistent with what your parents have seen is really a thing that's significant in faith development. That's an awesome example, Mike. Any other thoughts? Yeah, Glenn. No, not Glenn. I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay, good. So he started by saying continuity, but the notion was the way in which his family chose to live their life was sharing. They had a common life with other families, and so there was a consistency to it. And rather than Sunday being just a one-day compartment of faith where the faith life was disintegrated from the whole picture of the life, it was just the water that you swam in. Is that right? Yeah, that's awesome. Fantastic. Good. Any other last comments? Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. So what he was saying was that there was something about his environment where he was challenged by people, not just to accept status quo as reality, but he was really challenged in his faith life to push at the answers and to find out for himself what he believed. That's great. Okay. I want to ask a little bit of a different twist on that question, and it's a little bit more sensitive. And so share as you feel comfortable and as is appropriate, but what about what was not helpful in spiritual development, in spiritual nurturance? What were things that were done in environments that you wouldn't have wanted to see passed on? You'd like to see end with your experience. Yeah, Gina. The use of legalism, is that what you said? Negativism. Oh, okay. So if you do this, then this. In other words, can I put a different way of saying that? That fear as a motivator? Because I think that that's oftentimes something that can happen in when people are trying to do something good, but they don't have a lot of currency of grace in their lives, that fear can be a way that people use to influence people around their faith development. And that creates a really distorted picture of God. and a really distorted picture of the environment and a really distorted picture of ourselves. And I think that many people spend a lot of their lives trying to overcome a basic orientation to the world around them and to God that is based on fear. You know what I mean by that? I think it's really poisonous. Jamie, are you going to say something?
I have a good friend who was raised in the Catholic Church and by the nuns in school. And I speak to her about God and Jesus, and she thinks she's probably an atheist because she just can't imagine a man sitting up on the throne with this, you are going to hell if can't.
So more fear. Just the idea that certain descriptions of the way and the life of God, she's now having a hard time overcoming that. Yeah, Peggy, then Destiny.
A we versus they mentality.
My father and mother were not the same faith. They were the exact opposite.
Okay. Okay. So us, them, we, they. Yeah, Destiny, what would you add? Okay. Okay, so some people call that indoctrination, the idea that you're just supposed to accept information without any level of personalizing it and making it your own. I mean, I think there are certain aspects of indoctrination that are really good, but at the same time, if there's not an active participation of the learner with the material and an opportunity to accept it, then it really becomes this thing that's external to yourself. Is that true? Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one or two more comments about that. Mike, were you going to say one other thing? Again, louder. Okay. Yeah. Coercion, shame, guilt. These things are all negatives as it relates to a healthy development of the life of God. You know what a young lady who was sitting right here in the morning service said? You know what was the most negative thing about my spiritual life growing up? Is it was completely ignored. That there was no acknowledgement of anything spiritual in my family at all, or the fact that I had a soul. And so it took me years to recognize the voice of my soul, and that there was something there beyond just what I could see with my senses and experience with my body. Really true. Some of you may have experienced that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things that's really true about Jacob's well is we are really obsessed, I hope in a healthy way, with this notion of spiritual formation. What does it look like to be a people of God who individually and corporately are surrendered to our understanding of who God is revealed in Jesus? How do we begin to live in the way of God so that we are shaped in a way that's consistent with the scriptural story, with what we see of the people of God, both in the scriptures and through history? And how do we live in that way? How are we spiritually shaped? And how do we care for our souls and for the souls of one another? You know, one of the big convictions for me, because I come out of two academic backgrounds. One is seminary, which was very head, and then I was an art student, which is very heart, right? And so one of the things that's been very critical for me as I've thought about what kind of community I wanted to worship and help create in was this, not the community I wanted to worship, what kind of worship community did we want to create space for? And that was this idea of holistic. We wanted a community that was holistic. In other words, we wanted to create a space where the entire person could be engaged. You know, not that we would elevate one part of the human experience to the exclusion of all these other things. Do you know what I mean by that? Let me give you an example. Here's my working definition of worship. And you guys have heard me say this before. Worship is a lot of things. One of the things that's helpful for me in the understanding of what it is at this stage of my journey is this. It's the full surrender of everything I know of myself to everything I know of God. Okay? Let me explain to you what I mean by that. That as I became a follower of Jesus, I was not very much in touch with what was going on inside my life and inside my heart. I just kind of lived my life. And when I began to know who God was, I didn't know very much about who God was either. But I wanted to learn how to worship God, so I just said, okay, God, this is what I know of myself. I'm going to give it to you. And I didn't know very much of God either. But the more I began to give of myself, the more I began to discover of who God was. And as I began to discover who more and more and more God was, I began to fall more deeply and deeply in love with God, right? And then as God began to pour his grace into my life, all of a sudden he began to illuminate aspects of my character that had been in the dark for a long time. abuse, bad decisions I'd made, shame issues that I had around certain things. You see what I'm saying by that? And so I began to have courage because I began to understand how deeply God loved me, that I could go into those places of darkness and allow God to shine his light. And then once I did that, all of a sudden that area was available to me to then do what? Surrender it to God. God longs for every aspect of who we are, all of our minds, all of our hearts, all of our history, all of our bodies, in complete and utter surrender to him in worship. And as we begin to do that, we begin to understand more and more and more who he is. And we begin the infinite exploration of Yahweh. And it's awesome. And so if we live in communities and if our faith life is only this big, but our experience is this big, then our experience of God won't be very satisfying. And I think many of us have had experiences in churches where only one aspect of who we are is taken seriously. And so what we've learned to do is segregate our faith life over here and say, well, only this part of me is engaged. So I guess that's what faith is. And then I go live over here. Do you know what I mean by that? And what we want to do is holistically worship God with everything we are. So for instance, this worship experience, what we've tried to do here is create a space. And it's a space that's intellectual, right? It's a space that's relational. It's a space, hopefully, that's emotional. Hopefully, there's something of aesthetic beauty here. We want it a space to be holistic. We want it to address the real life issues that we're a part of. And we want the whole person in this space to have an encounter with God. Not just your head being engaged, or not simply appealing to raw emotion either. But to create a space that is holistic, where the whole person can do what? Experience God. You know, what we know about spiritual development these days is that we all have different pathways for how we have profound experiences of life in God. Some people are incredibly intellectual, and that the way that they access God and really begin to understand who God is by learning. How many people out there really love to learn and to read and to explore ideas and live very happily the life of the mind? I'm one of those people. Yeah. Others of you are people who are very much in your heart, and you engage with things emotionally, and you have to feel something before you allow it to get to your head. And so for you, being connected emotionally is a deep and necessary reality. How many of people out there, I know some of you won't raise your hands, but how many of you out there are more on the emotional side of things? That's the starting point, and you feel most connected to God when your emotions are engaged. Others of us are incredibly relational, aren't we? We experience God in relationships with other people, and so for us, sometimes church is a way of coming and being connected to other people, because in the face of another person, we begin to see the face of God. Are there people out here who are incredibly relational? Others are creative. You just have all this energy and creativity inside you, and unless you're expressing it in some way, it just seems like something's missing in you. And there's another group of you here tonight, and there's probably more groups than this, that the only thing that really satisfies you is having the opportunity to serve somebody else. Faith, if it doesn't show itself in works in your life, is dead. See, we all have these different ways in which we grow, in which we are stimulated spiritually. And what we're trying to do as a church is help people find those pathways so they can be fully engaged and they can do the things that God has given them the courage and the motivation and the gifting to do. We have these spiritual pathways. We have these different kinds of intelligences, emotional intelligence, intelligence like IQ. We have all these things that engage. But if we're not dealing with the reality of who God has created us in our complexity, then we're having a totally underwhelming experience of our life in God. And my guess is it will just be a compartment. Now, if it's that way for adults, how much more kids? How much more children? We're in here having this pretty creative, engaging worship gathering. And what do they get? Sunday school? Where what we do is we say, you know what? We don't want to pass on to your faith. We're going to go buy some $500 curriculum in a store that's written by somebody in Grand Rapids, and we're going to pass on their faith. Because we live in a culture that pays experts to pass on their knowledge because we think we don't know anything anymore. But you know what? I don't want Jacob's Well to entrust our life and the life of our children to experts. I want you to pass on your faith to my son. Because I know you. I know your struggles. I know your gifts. And we are called to share our lives. And you know what? I want my son to influence you because I think he's extraordinary. And I think you have something to learn from him. I'm not picking on you, Austin. I would like you to influence my son, by the way. And you do. But you know what I'm saying with that? We're a community, and we're called to be creative in terms of how we influence one another and how we allow God to shape the story of our lives and how we do church together. See, let's look at this great passage from Deuteronomy chapter 6, can we? Jeff, go ahead and put it up on the screen. This is the Shema. This is one of the most famous passages for a practicing Jew. And the Shema is the Hebrew word, which is the verb for hear. And it's the proclamation that shapes the worship life of Israel. Shema Yisrael is the start. And I want us to read this aloud. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about what's happening in this passage in terms of what we're talking about. Spiritual formation. Pay attention to the verbs that are being used. Pay attention to the environments that are being engaged. Pay attention to who's in view developmentally in this passage. Let's read it together, okay, out loud. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 through 9. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be upon your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. What a great passage. Don't you love it? It's so rich. What things stood out to you as Mike mocked me? Give me some feedback, huh? The things in there in terms of what we're talking about today, what stands out to you from that passage? Come on. Yeah. Exactly. The admonition is to love the Lord your God holistically, right? With all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. God demands everything of us because he wants all of us. He loves us deeply. Yeah. The other side, what else stands out? There are a lot of verbs. Yeah. Can you remember just some of them off the top of your head? Impress. Talking. Sharing, walking. Yeah, good. Any other observations from this text? I'm sorry, I haven't even looked upstairs. You guys, I'm blinded by the sunlight coming in there. Anybody up there have any thoughts? No? Okay. Yeah, Brian. Yeah, a person's life is fully saturated in the ways of Yahweh. That there is no environment that is not intended to be lived in this reality of God and his identity and his story. I love it. I love how this passage starts out. Jeff, you go back one slide. How does it start? It says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. It starts with the identity of God, Yahweh. And what we discover is that this is the starting point of reality. The faith begins by revelation. We hear something that's outside of us and we have to respond to it. And what we discover is that the deity who reveals himself as the God and the creator of the universe is this person, Yahweh. And then you know what I love is the follow-up? It doesn't say, fear Yahweh. It doesn't say, obey Yahweh. It doesn't even say, describe Yahweh. It says, love Yahweh. So the revelation of God and his reality in this universe is intended to produce in us a response of what? Love. It's awesome that the revelation of Yahweh in the world elicits a response of love. That's the baseline. Love expressed in multiple ways. I mean, listen to the verbs. Love, hear, love, impress. And that's the Hebrew word there is imprint. Make an impression upon. Talk, sit, walk, lie down, get up, tie, bind, write. I mean, that's pretty descriptive, isn't it? I mean, just the language of all the things in which we're supposed to live in the way and in the story of God. It's so good. It's an environment, like I said, that is saturated with the story of Yahweh. See, here is my fundamental, one other observation about this passage. I am amazed that, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. Love the Lord your God. Know these commandments." And then immediately, what are we intended to do? Bring them into the lives of our children. One song we sang, "One generation will commend the story to another." This is part of what it means to be in the life of faith. That if you're not transmitting your faith, if you're not allowing it to be passed on to children in your life, then something fundamentally is missing. And guess what, folks? In the family of God, it's just not biological children. It's relationships within the community of faith. Are you living your life in such a way with enough proximity that your life actually presses on somebody and influences them and helps them to know? Are you being pressed on in that way? Because that's part of the deal. Immediately after we have revelation of God, the revelation is intended to be transmitted to those who are under our care and protection. It's awesome. Fundamentally, here is what I believe with all of my heart. Children have a relationship to God that is just as legitimate as we are, as we do. And I think that generally what we've done with kids in the church is say, hey, what is really serious happens in there, and we shuffle those kids off into childcare until they're old enough to get in here. And we don't take seriously the spiritual life that God has given them. And I just think it's an absolute tragedy. Because when I asked you what was done to cultivate your faith as a child, my guess is that every one of us in this room at some point had some kind of primal experience with God. And we don't know, and we didn't know what to do with it. Unless there was an environment that helped stimulate that, it was very confusing for us. But my guess is that every person in this room had at some point in their life some kind of experience with God. And so the question becomes, if children really do have a relationship to God, how do we cultivate it? And how do we help steward it? Because that's one of the things that we're given. As parents, you know what the greatest temptation in the world to do, folks, is to think that what I'm supposed to do is provide for my children an education that helps them earn money and produce a valuable product. I don't buy it anymore. My understanding of what I'm invited to do as a parent is to create an environment that allows my child to grow in freedom and in grace so that they might discover and discern the calling that God has put on their heart. So that whether they're a garbage man, a teacher, a president, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter, as long as they know that they are loved and they have a calling from God, and that regardless of where they're living out their life and what they're doing to earn a living, they have a fundamental connection to their identity as a creature of God called to do something for the sake of the kingdom of God. Do you know your calling? Or do you have a job? And I'm not saying that your job equals your calling, because many people just work in order that they can do something else. The point is that do you understand your life as having a call on it? And I want to be a church that helps people and helps children to discover and find their identity and their sense of calling as it relates to that. We are called to live in the story of Yahweh, and that means that we have to be connected relationally to one another, and that means that we have to be engaged creatively in reimagining what it looks like to shape faith. You know, we've been talking a lot about kids stuff around here, and part of it's because we're going back to school. But one of the things is that some very creative people over the last 6 months as a church have been trying to reimagine what it would look like to do faith development. And starting next week, we're starting a whole new way. Sunday school has been put to death at Jacob's Well. It is over. Do you guys remember the extreme makeover thing that we've been talking about? I don't know if you all had a chance to walk around the building. But basically what we are trying to do in the last month was alter our space in creative ways to create environments that stimulate the faith life of children. And basically what we've been doing is saying that we think that kids are invited to know and to live in the story of God, and that we want to help them, just like we want to have different pathways through which we experience and grow in God. We want them to have those things. And so what we've said is kids are going to come to church, and they're going to be part of a group of people that are being discipled by adults. And we're going to, every month, we're going to choose a new story in the scriptures, and we're going to help them live in that. But rather than just learning mindless fables about God that try to teach us how to modify our behavior, right? We're going to talk about really what does it mean to live in the story of God. And then we're going to ask our kids to take seriously the expressing of their faith. And so we have one room that's completely dedicated to art. And what we're asking is the Jacob's Well community, those of you who are artists, we need you to come in and teach our kids how to express themselves creatively through art. You know, in the past, the only people that were able to do Sunday school were who? Teachers. That's not right. And so we need artists in our community to be teaching children what it looks like to express themselves to God in their creativity. Another thing that they're going to do is that as they begin to live in the story, they're going to write scripts and begin to act. We have a whole room with a stage on it and everything. And so those of you who are creative writers and who are actors and who love to do these things, we need you to come in and begin to help kids know how to express themselves and to be creative and that they might live in the story of God. There's others of you who are music. We're going to do music and movement, and that's going to include both singing and creating noise, and there's lots of you that are great at that. Guys, that also includes rooms that are dedicated to the spiritual discipline of dodgeball. And that fine prayer aid, the round rubber ball. Prayer welts, those kind of things on you. No, but the idea that we're physically engaged in our life, that we're expressing ourselves creatively, and then the other thing that we're going to do is mission. We're going to teach our kids to serve, because you know what? Kids just don't receive, they teach. And we're going to take seriously the opportunity for God to make an impact through kids on us and in the community around them. Because we want people to be trained and to be spiritually formed so that their life, and they might learn what it looks like to be faithful to God as a 4-year-old. And as a 19-year-old, and as a 22-year-old, and as a 35-year-old, and as a 78-year-old, and as a 100-year-old, what does it mean to be faithful to God? I want to close by reading this passage of Scripture tonight that I just find really compelling in light of these things. It's from Mark's Gospel, which we're going to getting ready to start back into here in a couple weeks, folks, picking Mark up after our summer break. I'm really getting fired up. I hope you are, too. But this is Jesus speaking about children. This is from Eugene Peterson's translation of the Message. I want you to listen very carefully. The people brought children to Jesus, hoping he might touch them. Isn't that awesome? The disciples shooed them off. See, I think that's so much the temptation. But Jesus, he was irate. And he let them know it. Don't push these children away. Don't ever get between them and me. These children are at the very center of life in the kingdom. These children are at the very center of life in the kingdom. Mark this. Unless you accept God's kingdom in the simplicity of a child, you'll never get in. Then, gathering the children up in his arms, he laid his hands of blessing on them. See, I think we all long to be gathered as a child into the arms of Christ. And I want to be a community of people that doesn't shoo children away, that doesn't shoo our childish parts of who we are in our faith away, but that says, Jesus, wherever we are, whoever we are, we take seriously the invitation to live life in your kingdom. And we're going to do whatever it takes to steward our life together. Let's pray, you guys. Lord Jesus, thank